This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Scott Dixon's got Mike Conway, I mean, right on his heels. That nose of the number 20 machine is right underneath the rear wing of that target number 9 of Scott Dixon.
And in the pits, we're beginning to wonder, because we see refuelers in the target Chip Ganassi pit standing over the wall.
There goes Dixon to pit road. Scott Dixon goes to pit road. Mike Conway takes the lead on the streets of Long Beach.
Twin checkers. Mike Conway has scored the win here. And what has proven to be an amazing day.
What a run for Mike Conway. Mike, you are as calm, cool, and collected. We joke about your pulse is always at 40. You've got to be fired up.
I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm actually here. I mean, wow, just awesome job by the team. We just really hung in there all day. You know, we weren't sure what we had, but just hung in there all the way at the end, and it just seemed to come to us. And just fantastic job by the boys, all the fuzzy crew. I can't believe it. Two times Long Beach winner. It's unbelievable.
All right. Scott Dixon, this is what he needs. He needs to finish up front. He needs points. He has not had a good season to date, and he leads here at Long Beach. Never found victory here. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. Never been on the podium here. But he has been fast over the last couple rounds. He's just had bad luck. But Scott Dixon wins at Long Beach for the first time.
How will this win rate amongst the others?
It's this is, you know, I was lucky enough to win here back in the day, I think in 2000 in Indy Lights, and I've never had a chance since then. But huge credit to the team, and I still can't believe we won here at Long Beach. It's such a memorable and such a worthy track.
Into turn 9 and 10, the final time through the hairpin. Will this come into play? Look at Dixon right on the back bumper of the 22, right on the back wing. Can he make it happen? Simon Pagenaud trying to hold on. Pagenaud's going to win at Long Beach.
Simon, how long have you been dreaming about this opportunity to win at this place?
Yeah, 2006 was my first American race right here. So, a lot of memories. You know, my best, the funniest win was in sports car when I won in the last lap. But this one, holding Dixon, man, that's a lot of work. So, I'm just so proud of the guys. As you saw, the pit sequence just won it. They're awesome. What a start of the season. I don't know what to say. The PPG car is actually good luck for me. Every time I'm driving this car, every time we have good results.
Welcome to Trackside as we get set for the 43rd Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach coming up this weekend from Southern California. Hello, I'm Kevin Lee in a somewhat gloomy Indianapolis. For the moment, David Deering is here, our studio producer. We'll hook up with Kirk Cavan in just a moment. He's tweeted and teased his location for tonight's program. We'll get to that in just a second. Highlights courtesy of NBCSN. The last 3 years, the conclusion to Long Beach with three different winners and more history to be made coming up this weekend. It's the debut of the NBCSN portion of the IndyCar schedule, and we've got bonus coverage. Join us Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock Eastern for live practice coverage. NBCSN has practice 2 on Friday. Qualifying on Saturday airs at 7:30 Eastern. It's a one-hour delay, so if you must not know how it's going to happen, just get yourself delayed by an hour on your Twitter machine, and you'll be in the loop for that. 7:30 Eastern, Saturday evening, a 90-minute qualifying show, and then we are live on Sunday at 4 o'clock. About 4:30 is the green flag for the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. So much history at this place. It is the second longest continuous active event on the IndyCar schedule, behind only the 100 editions of the Indianapolis 500. Phoenix has had more events, but they've not been in succession with 62, and Mid-Ohio and Toronto are just behind with 32, and they've also had a couple of breaks. Certainly Toronto had the one-year hiatus, and Mid-Ohio might have at one point as well. So looking forward to this coming up this weekend, and we'll see if the balance in power, literal power, continues between Chevy and Honda after Honda's, I think, fair to say, surprising performance in the opener at St. Petersburg. And this event has generally produced the winner coming from the front of the field. All but only six times has the winner come from outside of the front three rows. In fact, the top five in that race. So qualifying is key. However, there have been a couple of times in recent years. Mike Conway from 17th, and Will Power won from 12th just a few years ago. So we have seen how cautions coming out at good or bad times, depending on your perspective, can certainly shake things up. So we're ready to get going with Cars on Track coming up on Friday morning. We're ready to find Kurt Cavanaugh joining us from a disclosed location. Kurt, hello, where are you?
Well, I'm at Chase Field in Phoenix, home of the Arizona Diamondbacks. I know you'd be quite envious of this. I'm standing on the top step of the dugout as if I'm the manager of the Diamondbacks. And Graham Rahal is here doing a media tour today in Phoenix. I have not been to one of these media tours, so in part that was a good chance for me to come see how it works since the people I work with do this on a regular basis. And the second kind of reason is to really start making an impact with key media here in the Phoenix area as we get ready for a race later in the month, 28th, 29th of April, so at Phoenix Raceway. So it's just a good time to see things, and you get to do some interesting things over the course of a year. Being on the field at a baseball park is pretty high on the list.
That is pretty cool. Does Graham get to take batting practice or anything?
There seems to be a little bit of a conflict going on between Graham, who wants to do it, and those saying he either shouldn't or can't. I think what's happened is they allow certain celebrities to do that, and they only have a limited number, or one, I think. And I could be wrong about this. This is kind of the backstory that I'm hearing. And the original plan was for him to be here last night for the game, and he's here tonight because the testing schedule changed from PIR to Sonoma yesterday, and so he was in Sonoma yesterday, couldn't make the game last night, therefore is not taking batting practice tonight. That may not be the full story, but that's as good as any I've got.
Well, and I also think that the closer you get to game time, so you're 3 hours away from game time, right? I think if you were there at noon today, you might have had more of an opportunity, but it's probably getting a little too close to put too many extras in there.
Let me just tell you, Kevin, I am so close to the batting cage that if the batting cage wasn't sculpted just properly, I'd be in foul territory, and I could be at third base in about 8 strides. So this is pretty close. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, it is fun. If you've not actually gone out, if you're any kind of a baseball fan, I think even if you're not, if you just appreciate good sport and to watch, you think they're good watching on television or even sitting in the stands at a game, but get down there low and watch them practice and watch the skill that's involved and watch them hit a pitch that's, say, 75 miles an hour, the average speed of a slightly slower than a high school pitch, maybe even the same speed at 80 or so of a high school pitch, and they hit about 9 or 10 in a row on the screws. It's really superb to watch the skill that all of us tried to have and none of us actually did have. So
yeah, it really makes me think about you because, you got a 4-year-old guy on the pitching mound. He's not even on the mound, and I'm trying to follow the ball. This guy's just throwing batting practice, and I almost can't follow the ball. It's that quick. It's what a throw. And so, can't imagine a guy throwing 95 later tonight. But just a really neat thing. And Graham's been terrific. We talk about this a lot. The IndyCar Series really blessed, with race fans really blessed, that guys like Graham, Hinchcliffe, Ryan Hunter-Reay, go down the list. I mean, there's just so many of Castroneves, Kanaan, they're so good at explaining the sport. Graham did a series of TV interviews today, and I just sat and listened to him, and I've done a fair amount of broadcasting, as and his answers were just so good, so realistic, so much put you in the car of what it's like. I just marveled at really how good a communicators guys like him are. We're just kind of lucky that we've got guys like that can explain it to the average person.
And I think guys like Graham and Joseph and Ryan Hunter-Reay, and I think Hinch would be in this category, and there are others I'm forgetting, Connor, that know other sports. They're talking a lot of times to sportscasters who don't know much, if anything, about racing, and I think it helps if they can occasionally use an analogy or bring some other part of the conversation into it that isn't just hardcore racing.
Yeah, it's exactly right. He's brought this up several times today just to talk about you know, in the middle of a sentence, be able to relate it to a football situation or a baseball pitcher, and you know, just casual conversation. You know, Graham, he's gonna exchange jerseys and helmets, his helmet and one of his helmets decorated up, and get a jersey later on from Andrew Chafin. He's a pitcher on the Diamondbacks. They're both from Ohio, and just their ability to communicate with each other, and that's kind of what will bring people out to the racetrack. Athletes who have Twitter followers and have influence. I know he's going to talk to some of the Giants guys, and that'll be important as we move towards Sonoma later in the year. And I think you'll see a lot of Giants players, for example, come out to the racetrack during the Sonoma weekend, take a two-seater ride, and really get an appreciation for what IndyCar racing is.
Well, good. And you know my standard plea that when you do get someone set up for batting practice, I want to throw it. I've got lots of practice throwing to junior high kids, so I think that'll transfer very nicely to race car drivers. So put that on your list.
You're on my list. Okay. There's no question about it. It's a one-man list.
Okay.
Graham actually threw out a first pitch at the White Sox park a few years ago and is still a little miffed that he threw it high. So he wants another shot at it. So,
okay.
Actually, his dad being a Cubs fan, he'd like to do it at Wrigley sometime. But I'll see what I can do for you.
All right. I'm going on that trip, too, if he goes to Wrigley. All right, let's get to this weekend, the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. I touched on it. What separates this event from all the others? Where does this one rank on the schedule?
Well, again, I'll go back to something Graham said today. I thought this was perfect. When you're in Long Beach and you see all the people, and, yeah, a lot of those people don't know really an Indy car from an Indy Lights car. You know, they hear them, but they're mostly there to have a good time. But the difference with this event is that when you say Grand Prix in the L.A. market, especially in the south part of the market, they know what you're talking about. They know it's an IndyCar race. They know that it's the Andretti's and the Ray Halls and the guys who have come up through this sport. You know, they've been IndyCar racing since 1984. So Grand Prix goes back in Los Angeles to, I think, 75. So, you know, you're talking about real diehard event goers, maybe not necessarily race fans. We all acknowledge it's one of the great parties. But you say we're going to the beach. Yeah, they obviously talk sand and ocean, but they also understand that there's something big in town, and the crowd at the gate will reflect that. And that's not always the case as we move through the season.
And I think it's a good mix. You do have the party goers. You do have people that don't see a race car all weekend. But I said this on the show before this one, on John's show, that I think I probably get stopped by more people that are hardcore fans that watch the telecast, that listen to our radio show online there as I do anywhere else. And you wouldn't expect that being about as far away as we can be, but it is a car community.
Yeah, it really is. And that's another thing that has resonated with Graham in this town particularly, because Phoenix and L.A. are similar in this respect, but very much a car culture. And Graham has talked about how much he does live in L.A. A lot of the time, being married to Courtney Force, but he really likes this Phoenix market because the car culture is really, really at a par with nobody really in the country. You know, Indianapolis, we like cars, but we're not craving them the way they do in the Southwest, and so. You go to L.A. and it's really a car culture, and he can speak to that. And a lot of these guys that have racing in their blood is because they have high-performance cars or fancy cars that that you'll see on the 405 or you'll see on the 5 as you go out across town. So it's car culture really connects in L.A.
Okay, I need to ask you one particular question that maybe you can help me with, and we'll get to some other things in news and notes. I saw this come out in a release yesterday, that Ed Carpenter Racing's Spencer Pigot is going to have as his primary sponsor Loki the Wolf Dog, who is described as an Instagram star, media influencer. What do you know of this, and how does this work?
Well, I wasn't privy to the details behind it, but it doesn't take much for me to come to some conclusions about what happened. These influencers charge great deal of money. Doesn't take, you know, they charge quite a bit of money to come out and do a Facebook post or a Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat event. And so they'll charge you by the post, let's say. And some of the guys and gals who have a large following will charge $5,000, $10,000 per tweet or per Snapchat entry. You know, they have a fee. So what they've done, I think, in this case, is they've got an influencer. They probably weren't going to sell that sponsorship anyway for the car at a primary level. And they've worked out a number that they think is worth it from the influencer's point of view and from the team's point of view on how much exposure they'll get. And they're willing, in this case, to trade exposure for a spot on the car.
So it's one of those that should help both of them.
Now, right. I think it probably helps the team more than the influencer, in my opinion, because the influencer is just getting a spot on the car, which probably doesn't help his brand. Maybe it does, but I would think it helps the team more than it helps the influencer, because the team is getting its sponsorship out. It's getting its logos and drivers shown. So I think that's probably more beneficial for the team side. So good for them to get this and to do something different. I think the number of followers, this dog has like 2 million followers. It's a hefty number. So it's not like this has 25,000, you know, followers as I, you know, like I might. So this is really an influencer.
And so the dog will post for the car and the team on race weekend, presumably?
Yeah, probably mostly Saturday, Sunday, I would think. And the dog's coming to the track on Thursday, so tomorrow.
It's an actual dog.
There's an actual dog. And the dog, in fact, we've had to kind of jump, not we, but the group has had to kind of jump through hoops a little bit because pets are not allowed at the racetrack, at the event. So
unless they have a million social media followers.
Yeah, actually, it's 2 million.
Okay.
If you get to the seven-figure mark, you apparently can come in on a leash.
Okay. All right. Coming up in just a moment, we'll get in some other notes from the week, but we will talk about some events coming up. We have news on the Carb Night Burger Bash, and also we need to speak on the Kevin Lee Grand Prix, which is a week from yesterday, Tuesday night, next week at Fast Times, and our show will be there. We'll do that. And Paul Tracy coming up in just about 15 minutes, and later on, live in studio tonight after 8 o'clock, the great Donald Davidson talks about the history of the 500 and an A.J. Foyt exhibit coming to the IMS Museum. Your tweets are welcome at Kevin Lee 23. It's Trackside on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
There's a girl somewhere in Tupelo who's with a guy she barely knows. Would probably sell his soul for a kiss. There's a girl somewhere in Arkansas who's talking with a southern
This is Big Machine Records artist Trent Harmon, last year's winner on American Idol. And someone we will get to see up and close in the very near future. Thanks for staying with us. Trackside on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is at the Arizona Diamondbacks game tonight on a promotional tour with Graham Rahal. So the link, Trent Harmon will be doing what, Kurt?
Well, first of all, I'm on Periscope, and Graham Rahal is on Periscope with Dick Vitale. So this is what happens when you end up at ballparks unexpectedly. You got Dick Vitale talking college basketball with Graham Rahal. So,
and Dick is really doing most of the talking.
Yeah, he's doing most of the talking.
Yes.
But it's
I want to see Walton and Vitale together. That would be something. I think they did
once,
and the two of them just talked over each other.
So Trent Harmon is a rising country music star, winner of the American Idol season, the final season, and he has agreed to join us at the Carb Night Burger Bash on May 26th, I think what the dates were. As you know, because you've been to all of them in the past, that we do this family-free, and I stress the word free, fundraiser, because people buy cheeseburgers and milkshakes, or steak burgers, actually, and milkshakes and fries from Steak and Shake, and they're the proud sponsor of the last couple years of the Burger Bash at Pan Am Plaza, downtown Indy. Most of the people listening to the show know about it. But so we'll have Verizon IndyCar Series drivers during a show from roughly 6 to 9 p.m. We'll do the live portion on our radio station from 7 to 9, and then at 9 o'clock, Trent Harmon, who should bring, he's going to perform a concert for about an hour and a half, and he should bring a nice younger audience to our to our event, which is really in line with where IndyCar wants to be and get younger with its audience. Not necessarily abandoned, certainly not abandoned the older, those of us north of 40, but we want to get some young people in, and I think this will be a good way for people who want to see Trent Harmon perform and have a concert to come to the Pan Am Plaza, hear the IndyCar drivers, relate to the Joseph Newgardens and Connor Daly's and Hinchcliffe's, and then stay for the concert. So it should be a really good thing. Trent Harmon's already generating a lot of national and regional, particularly regional interest for the Burger Bash and the Indy 500, and I think this is going to be really a special thing for us.
And you've worked with the Emmis Country Station, Hank FM, here a little bit and talked to them. They believe this guy's going to be somebody, right?
Yeah, they really do. It's one of those things that I've asked around people who just know music, not necessarily just country music, but people have said, well, he's got a top 20 hit, Trent Harmon does, and he's not yet even released his first album, which I don't know the timing of the release of that album, but man, if it should happen to come out in the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, well, we may have some really big on our hands, and that's good for not only the Burger Bash, but the Indy 500 and IndyCar and, you know, even Kevin Lee. So that's good for all of us.
Well, I like what I've heard, so we'll look forward to that coming up. Carbonite Burger Bash. The Steak and Shake Carbonite Burger Bash, again, from 6 to 9-ish. And then Trent Harmon will be performing at Pan Am Plaza right after we're done, again, getting you set for the 101st Indianapolis 500. While we're staying on show news, kind of our warm-up for the Burger Bash is next Tuesday night. You'll be with us. You are in town next Tuesday still, correct? I'll take that as a yes. Okay, so next Tuesday. Yes.
Sorry. I looked away just a second. Yes, I'll be there.
Okay, these are our show conversations on the air live. So next Tuesday night, Fast Times Indoor Karting, and actually the event is from 6 until 10, so you can come out a little bit earlier. It's the second annual Kevin Lee Grand Prix honoring Ben Burchard, and it's at Fast Times Indoor Karting, and it benefits the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Hospital, raising money for children's cancer research. There is going to be food from Sullivan's Steakhouse, Redemption Ales and Crown Liquors provide the beverages after you race, or there is a ticket option where you don't race at all. That means you can imbibe a little bit earlier. That's $25, $50 if you want to have a race. I'll be doing more racing this year. We'll have some IndyCar drivers, hopefully, out there. I've invited the Indy Lights and the Monster Road to Indy drivers to come out. USAC, NHRA has been invited to participate. All of those that buy tickets while they last will get an event T-shirt for the Kevin Lee Grand Prix again, and those are courtesy of our friends, the Caldwells, Don and Jennifer Caldwell, who are sponsors of Jackson's race team, and they volunteered without being asked for the second year in a row to fully fund the cost for the T-shirts. So that means all of the money can go back to the charity. They're taking care of all this cost, so it's not like a dollar of it goes to the charity. It's everything is going. This is just an added bonus to make sure that we help sell some tickets and make sure everyone has something they can take home. So thanks to Caldwell Realty and the Caldwell Subways in Hobart and in the Valparaiso area, and also their Jackson Hewitt Tax Service as well for providing that. And thanks to everyone involved. So we look forward to that coming up next week, where you can race. David Deering, do you have to be on the board, or can you come out?
More than likely, I'll be here.
You have to be here. So you come out another night, and we'll get you a race.
Sounds good.
We'll do an extra special night. I know Tony Donahue said he'd be here, and we'll have some others there as well. And I think it's also safe to say Kurt will probably not be racing.
No, I'm not racing. I'm going to talk with Vital here about shooting some free throws, but we're not going to race.
Okay, good enough. That's fair enough. So we'll look forward to that coming up next week on the program. Hey, I saw this. We were talking last week about the possibilities of IndyCar's next media deal and how they could get creative. And we were talking with Adam Stern about the possibilities of someone like Amazon or Netflix. Did you see that Amazon is paying $50 million for 10 Thursday night football games? And that's not even exclusive. They're still going to be on CBS or NBC, but they're paying $50 million just for the people who don't have traditional television anymore.
Well, I hope they don't spend all their money in one place, because we could use some help like that. I'd even take it without the zero.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Well, I think this is a real interesting possibility. And then I see Twitter is going to be exclusively showing a fight this Friday night. Admittedly, it's between two people I don't know, but then again, I've not really heard of any fighters that aren't named Mayweather, so they could. This could be a big fight. They're doing an MLB Friday night package where they're showing games there that may or may not be available on television. I think this is the next frontier. You know, as I said, I think you still need television to get the reach that your teams and their sponsors are going to want. But if you can work out an agreement with the networks for coverage that otherwise would not be on television, I think this is a real value for both sides. I do believe that places like Netflix and Amazon will sell subscriptions to get sporting content with a very rabid fan base for things they can't see anywhere else. And this is revenue that otherwise wouldn't be generated. So I think this can be a win for both sides. So I'm really intrigued to see how this develops.
Yeah, I think so too. I take $5 million right now, wouldn't you? Maybe we get a little side deal for the radio show.
Yep, we'll go ahead and take that cut right there, and we'll have more live shows out and about. All right, Kurt, I'm going to let you get to chasing down Dick Vitale. Shoot free throws. I think I want to see how you do. I like your odds over Graham. I'm not sure about that, but that's just my guess. I think he's more of a golfer.
We'll take a little bet right now, and I think. My percentage will start with an 8. I'm not sure his does.
That's bold. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Kurt. We'll see you on Thursday or Friday in Long Beach.
Okay. Thanks.
Kurt Cavan joining us tonight on the road. So we have made other arrangements to have other people to chat with, and I think you'll like what we have in store. Donald Davidson coming up in just a little bit. I got a lot of tweets. I'm going to address those coming up in a little while. And up next, the thrill from West Hill. Paul Tracy joins us. Trackside, 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
All right, I know I promised PT here, but those that know PT well will not be surprised that he's unavailable at the moment. We have a weekly conference call for the NBC broadcast, and he's still perfect this season. We had our first yesterday, and yeah, he was not at that either. And I think he hit about, 350, 400, which is great if you're a baseball player, but 35 or 40% is not normally what is expected. But when you've won 31 races, there are different rules, and when you're entertaining on the broadcast, different rules too. So we'll try Paul again in a few minutes and hook up with him because a lot of things to talk about. I think when we were talking at the Phoenix test, he's kind of called the shot, and I'll ask him about this. He said, I think Sebastian Bourdais is going to be somebody to watch this year, and he is someone that has a real chance of making a dent. So we'll talk to PT about that and other things coming up in a little while. So that leaves us some time to roll through some tweets. At KevinLee23, and I'll refresh back to the top, and then I know I've got some archive that I've saved from the last week or so as well. Oh, thanks to Luke, has signed up for our event at Fast Times next week. And Luke's quick. Stay out of his group. He's, would you call him a pro or a semi-pro? Luke Durrett races at Newcastle with Jackson. He's one of the older kids. We raced quarter midgets with him when Jackson first started. So he would be someone to get on your side if you do any kind of a team aspect in one of those events. Gord Smith says, Long Beach will be the only race I don't watch live this year. Putting it up against the Sunday back night of the Masters is insanity. Well, I understand that that's a challenge, but you're always going to be going up against something. And the race is essentially a week earlier than normal this year is because Easter is the following week, and events don't do well on Easter. They prefer to not race. NASCAR always takes that weekend off. I think IndyCar's tried it before. Was there a race in Vegas, a kart race or a champ car race? And I don't think that did well at all. So that's just the nature of the schedule. I think it'll be pushed back a little bit again next year. And what they've had, Barber has been up against the Masters before. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, I saw a question that maybe I'll find earlier. Why weren't they racing the weekend before on Sunday afternoon with nothing significant going on? The Final Four had been the day before. True, but you still would have been going head-to-head with the NASCAR race. And while it's not ideal to go head-to-head with the Masters, I think I'd still rather go head-to-head with that than a cup race. I think you're more likely to have people that might be inclined to watch your race that choose the NASCAR race than choose the golf. And I traditionally watch the majors, but I'm probably not watching them over a race. I'm probably watching the race first instead of the Masters. Then I might have that on DVR, and if I see something is really good going on that I got to catch, then I'll flip over and look at that a little bit. But it's one of the challenges. There's no perfect world in scheduling. Kurt St. Angelo asks, would you know the schedule for Gateway Saturday, August 26th? They're qualifying in the race on the same day. It would make sense. Yes, they are. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but that is one of, if not the only event, that qualifying will be on the same day as the race. I have not seen the final schedule yet. It may not be out, but I know qualifying is that day, and I'm sure it'll be separated by 3, 4, 5 hours, something like that. Let's see. Lots of Twitter-type questions or download questions. For those that didn't follow, we are on iTunes now, but you can get it on Android. And I tweeted out some helpful tips this week. If you go through my timeline, there's not that much there. You'll find some of the other ways if you prefer Android to find the podcast. So there are different ways to do that, and you can still always get it at 1070thefan.com. George O'Donnell asks, have you noticed how low car numbers are of full-time drivers? RHR number 28 is only beaten by number 83 and number 98. Where are those high numbers? So I think he's asking why are more low numbers. You know, one thing I would think of, I think you'd like to have single digits if possible, because that allows you more sponsor space. Then if you have to, you know, a 2 takes less room than 22. So maybe that is a factor in some cases. Probably not. That's probably not the case. I think that would be more, you know, an IndyCar on the end plate of the wing or at the nose cone. It's not like there was any other sponsorship going there, but that might apply more to a stock car or maybe a sprint car or something like that.
It's just always aesthetics to me. Like in basketball, you don't see very many stars with high numbers. Like they kind of keep it under 30 most of the time.
Yep. Makes it easier for the referees, too, to signal it in.
They normally like only big guys carry the 45 and 55 and stuff like that.
Yep. So, yeah, I hadn't noticed that. Interesting thought. This one is from Don Davis at Big D Kart. The Formula E race was pretty dramatic last Saturday. Do you think Long Beach will be a similar energy-saving affair? I'll have to take your word that the Formula E race was dramatic. I was busy, and I should probably give it another chance. Because I like Dario, and he's on, and Bob Varsha is on the broadcast now as well. He had been a host of it before, but I think he's actually at the events. I think he might be calling the races, just from what I saw on Twitter, and I'm a big fan of Bob's and Dario's. So I will at some point try it again, but I watched some the first and second season, and I just the noise and lack thereof, and what noise they have was sounded like fingernails on a chalkboard. And the cars just, they aren't there yet. And as I've said many times, I'm probably looking at this the wrong way, and I'm probably one of many that in 5 or 10 years is going to say, boy, I missed that one, because that was the future, and the people that got on board this were on board. You know, that may be the next thing, but they're going to have to figure it out and present it to be a little more entertaining before I'm going to really get on board with that at this point. But, you know, they've got some big money people behind them. What was it? I just read something online that they're going to have a race in Montreal, and the story in the Montreal paper, and they're putting up like $15 million to build this track, and they're believing, they had this absurd number of people that they put in this story that are going to attend this race. You know, like several hundred thousand. And I think most of the races have had about 4,000 or 5,000. Something like that. Now, they've got big corporate backers, so it may be financially doing well, but I'm not sure about the number of people that you're getting coming in the gates at this point. And as I said, in a few years, we'll probably look back, or we might look back and say, you know, a lot of us missed it on this one. All right, to the archives. Let's see what else we have from the Twitter inbox. From Cam Soups FL. Mitchell asks, any word on Townsend for the 500? That's a good question. I have talked to Townsend about this, so I will choose my words carefully, but I think it's safe to say that Townsend's been there, done that, and he's gonna hold out for a ride that he thinks can win. And I know he said this publicly. He's not interested in just showing up and racing the Indy 500. Maybe at one time that was the goal, but when you get to a point where you've been quick and you've run up front a little bit and you've done your 10 Indianapolis 500s and you have a good career and plenty to do otherwise, then I think you're at the point where you can be a little bit picky. So, you know, personally, I hope he still does it, but I understand if he decides he's not going to. And as far as I know, he's not made a decision one way or the other. And I saw Robin put something in the mailbag today that he had talked to Townsend more recently than I had and said he would make a decision by Phoenix, and it likely depends on what the options are that are out there. You know, the fifth Andretti car has not been announced at this point. I've heard a couple of other names for that. I'm sure they're bringing some budget. You know, maybe Townsend decided, I'm decided of chasing budget and will go if hired and someone else finds sponsorship around me. So we shall see, but he certainly has shown that he's somebody you'd like to have, and I would imagine he's going to get a lot of calls from the teams that have open spots. I've got a few questions in for Donald that I'll save for the next hour. FT Hurley, Frederick says, when we were talking about prize money at the 500, he points out if $600,000 to start versus $300,000 got a few more cars for qualifying, that might be good for the fans, at least some, but the only way that is likely to happen is for a title sponsor for the race. So maybe to make it a bigger deal, would fans accept the State Farm Indianapolis 500? That's an example of a solidly American traditional brand that fits. Would fans accept? I think most would, but certainly some wouldn't. It's a great question, Frederick, and he's right. He's right. If you really ever do want to significantly up the purse, that is a way that you can do it. And, you know, citing Robin again, I think I either heard him recently, maybe he said it on John's show or on the mailbag, saying he'd be okay with that. I know a lot of people would not. I'd be okay with it as long as Indianapolis 500, I put it this way, I would be okay with it, but there would still be part of me that would feel uncomfortable and you wish it wouldn't be that way. But you can understand. You have to do it the right way. It has to be the right name. And what Frederick cites, that kind of example is what we're looking for. It needs to be the right company. It needs to be a shorter name. And it needs to include Indianapolis 500 still in the title. But it is something worth discussing. It's one of those things that if you really want to, and then it comes down to what the dollar amount is. You've got to ask for a big number and get the big number to do that. But that is certainly a way to do it. John Day sent me this, 81 Indy, responding to an Ed Carpenter tweet and a twit pic of Ed over the car with someone with a goatee in a car in a race suit, and says, with the test being canceled, it's a good time to get Sam Hornish reacquainted with an Indy car. And from afar, you see that goatee without the mustache and the sideburns and the dark hair and the hat pulled down. I think some thought that was obviously Sam. That's not Sam. And it was sent out on April 1st, and John said, not sure if this is an April Fool's prank or is there something really to this worth checking, question mark. Since it's not Sam, I don't think it's really worth checking. And I think Ed was having some fun with us. I don't think Sam will do it. And I can't ever say never, but I would be surprised if Sam came back and ran the Indy 500. I do think he has thought about it since he left, and he has toyed with the idea. But I believe he has moved on at this point, and he's content in only waiting for good opportunities. He's only interested in, you know, rides in Xfinity that have an opportunity to win, you know, whether it's for DEI or for Kyle Busch or whoever. And he's had a pretty good track record in the last couple of years. DJ asks, what's the difference between running three cars last year and running three cars this year for Ed Carpenter Racing at the 500? Inexperience with Piggott, question mark? No, I don't think that's it. I've seen some comments from Ed that he would love to have Spencer in a car, would like to make that happen. He said that they, one, don't physically have as many cars as they had, and they had a total write-off with the car that Joseph crashed at Texas last year. So they were in the bidding for the KV spare cars, the remaining car in the auction, And if they had gotten that, they would have been more likely, not totally likely, but more likely to do something. They still would have needed to fund it with sponsorship. But now you add in, they don't have the fully sponsored extra car, and they'd have to go out and procure a car somewhere else or take a chance with their other main cars. I forget how many it said they have. Maybe they have four. Maybe it was three, but they just don't have enough to feel like they're comfortable to have the spares that you want to have at Indianapolis. So that's the reasoning behind that. More of your questions coming up via Twitter at KevinLee23, Donald Davidson in a little bit, and we'll continue the search for Paul Tracy. It may go on for a while. It's Trackside on 107.5, 1070 The Fan. No one man should have all that power.
Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. I'm Will Power, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
That's just me and Double D tonight. Soon to be Double D Square. Donald Davidson will be here in a little bit. David Deering is here. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is hanging with Dick Vitale and Graham Rahal at the Arizona Diamondbacks game. Paul Tracy is incommunicado for the moment. My NBCSN co-workers are getting a good chuckle out of this. This is pretty normal. We'll continue to effort Paul in a little bit, but that's okay. Plenty of things to chat about, plenty of tweets to come, including a big change in the NBCSN broadcast coming up in a moment. I'll touch on that in a moment. Don't let me forget about that. It's something I need to talk about, David. From Snarky Moose, S2000 Moose. Apologies. Normally the Moose questions go to the top. I'm slacking. From Moose, he says, does the Lee Racing team aspire to Formula 4 U.S.? This is their opening weekend this weekend. I think they're at Homestead, and Formula 4 is a second-year series, and they're really cool-looking cars. I would say it's a step before USF 2000. It could be a similar step, a parallel step, but it's got Honda backing. Pirelli Tires is their backer, and is that one of our aspirations for Jackson? I assume it could be an aspiration, but we're going to need a lot more sponsorship from David Deering before something like that can happen. So that would be on the wish list and the dream list, but that's going to be tough to fund. But we'll see. You know, you can always dream, and you see how it goes. But that does lead me in, because I do need to thank, you know, if you have a radio show, well, one, it's a job, but those people are working every day. If you do a weekly radio show along with your other jobs, then maybe it's in part to thank your friends, get some other things done, and thank your kids' go-kart team sponsors. And I do really need to thank Nancy Chumley and Joe Whistler at Hinchman Racewear. If you're into racing, you know Hinchman. They've been on IndyCar drivers for years and years and years, and short track drivers, and also go-kart drivers as well. And the beginning of the year is always a huge thrash for Nancy and Joe and everyone at Hinchman, because everyone has a new suit, and they usually tell them about 3 days before the season starts, and maybe they even have a sponsor change and need a second one at a certain point. So they got Jackson's suit done in time for this past week, and it is incredibly cool. We are appreciative. I need to post a picture of like the six or seven different suits from when he was starting at 8 years old up through the years. And I would highly recommend them if you are into any type of racing. As I said, they traditionally do Nomex suits, you know, for USAC drivers, for NASCAR drivers, for IndyCar drivers. Haven't done a lot of kart suits recently, but I love our suit and what they came up with. I think it's going to last us longer than others have. They've done Pippa Mann's latest suit as well. So I checked with Nancy. They'll still do custom kart suits, and then the traditional racing suits with Nomex that are fireproof, they do as well. So look them up on the internet. Hinchman Indy is where you can find them as well. And we greatly appreciate what they have done for us throughout the years and this year as well. And that's also a good chance to thank all the other people that have helped Jackson out. Like I mentioned, they bought the T-shirts for the event coming up next Tuesday at Fast Times. Don and Jennifer Caldwell, if you're in the region, then you need to go into their Subway. I think there are pictures of Jackson up on the walls on South Lake Park, 6 and 51 in Hobart, and in North Calumet, on North Calumet in Valparaiso, right next to the Dollar General. Those are their three locations, along with their Caldwell Realty Services and Hewlett Jackson Tax Services that they have. We thank them. We thank Performance Tire Service Company, Hull Chiropractic, and Bell Helmets. Our opening race was this weekend, and it went pretty well, David. He's faster than he was, so now we'll have to work on some racecraft. He won the pole for both races, which is a pretty big deal. And the pack of six were all separated by about, 0.03 of a second, and they all ran together. The first race, we didn't quite have the setup to be quick enough. The second race, we were fast, but he got shoved off a little bit. All fair. You have to learn how to play physical with the big boys. These are kids that all do national races and are all experienced and didn't have the opportunity to get the finish that he wanted, but he finished fourth and fifth. So we'll take that. It's a good start, and they race again coming up this weekend as well. Now, here's the other thing, self-serving thing I want to mention. I'm going to take a moment for the broadcasts.
Don't forget.
Big change, maybe teasing a little bit too much as far as what people would notice. Most wouldn't notice this, but my right-hand man, you've maybe heard me speak of him before, Denny Stewart, who is my... We call them pit spotters. He's my pit assistant. He's basically in charge of me throughout the weekend. He has retired, and we're quite sad about this, but we are very happy for Denny, and we're very thankful for what he's done for us. He was Jack Arute's guy for many, many years, so I inherited him from Jack. And if you ever talk to Jack about Denny, he won't speak more highly of anyone else. He's just simply the best. And really, a lot of that job is, well, it's an important job for me because I tend to lose things. So there are real responsibilities. And Denny keeps me on the right path and is in charge of the golf cart keys and pens and information and other things like that. But it's got to be somebody you like hanging out with. You're spending a lot of time with this person, and I'm going to really miss spending time with Denny, who was a sprint car driver, has been around for many, many years, and he is welcome to come back whenever he wants, and we will see him at the racetrack. So this is just my public thank you to Denny for all he's done for me and what a great friend he's been, and for what he's done for the NBCSN and previously the Versus, and he was on the ABC team and for the broadcast all over the years, and we look forward to seeing Denny at the racetrack in a more casual style in the near future. Now, before anyone calls an ass for the opening, it's been filled, and I am excited to announce that Joe Berkmeyer from TracksideOnline.com will be stepping in, and he did a race with me last year, and Jan Bikas has already broken him in. He is Jan's spotter on the ABC broadcast, so Joe is very, very qualified, and he's a Reds fan, David, so you should like him, and we are excited to have Joe join us on a full-time basis throughout this season. And maybe as his next assignment, I will put him in charge of finding Paul Tracy, who has now texted me back and said my phone was dead and we might be able to find him. So we will try to get PT coming up in just a moment, and more of your tweets and Donald Davidson too on the way. Trackside 107.5 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Paul Tracy makes a turn onto the straightaway. The checkered flag will lie just ahead. And Paul Tracy has finally done it. He wins an IndyCar race. Paul Tracy becomes a champion in the IndyCars. The 10th different driver to win in a Penske car. And Paul Tracy has done it.
Final corner for Paul Tracy. Off of the hairpin, the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach comes to a conclusion. Paul Tracy, his 16th career win, his second at the Toyota Grand Prix at Long Beach, and his sixth on a street circuit.
And this is a really smart victory with a little bit of luck for Paul Tracy.
I can't wait for these interviews after the race. What a day for everyone involved in the 29th Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. Victory to Paul Tracy and the Players Forsythe team.
And here comes Tracy off the hairpin. And Paul Tracy wins the 30th anniversary Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. This is Tracy's fourth win at Long Beach.
Well, how cool is that? Not just to relive Paul Tracy's success at Long Beach, but to hear, what did we hear from Bob Jenkins? We heard from Bob Varsha, Tommy Kendall, Paul Page. Thanks for staying with us. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan, hour number two. From the DriveHubler.com studios, and the search party can take the rest of the night off. We have found our man PT. Charge your phone, I'm brother.
I'm here. My phone was dead. I've been at a motorcycle show all day, and sitting around and my phone died and I couldn't find anywhere to charge it.
I understand. Now, okay, that's good for this one. What about the conference call yesterday?
You know what? I was all set to do it and I was at the gym and I totally forgot about it.
Okay.
Right in the middle of it.
So. You're at the gym by 9 a.m.?
Oh, yeah. I'm there every morning.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, how have you been?
I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Yes.
Leaving to go to Long Beach tomorrow at 6:30 in the morning. Going to the Walk of Fame presentation. They're inducting Emerson Fittipaldi and Tommy Kendall tomorrow. Tommy called me and said, "Hey, would you come? I'm getting inducted. Will you come hang out with me?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "So I'll be there tomorrow at 9 in the morning."
Always look forward to that. I always look forward to the racer party, which is it's probably the only time of year I see Tommy anymore. So I look forward to that on Saturday night. That's a good time. You know, we talk about the significance of this event. What about for you? It's your first, we just heard it, your first IndyCar win, your first ever race in IndyCar was in Long Beach. How special is that place to you?
Well, it's an amazing racetrack, and like you said, it was my first win. It was my first ever race in an IndyCar, and to win there and to be as lucky as I was there to win there four times is pretty special. So, and different layouts too. I won on three different track layouts there. So, they've always had the the shoreline straightaway. But the track was three different types of layouts. You'd get down to the end of the straightaway. The first few years I was there, and you'd make a right-hand turn, and then a few years later, now you make a left-hand turn, and you go over to the around the fountain. So track has changed, but over the years, but the last few years, it's last 10 years, it stayed about the same.
You've told me this story before, but I don't think I've had you tell it on the air of everything going around that first event, what, you know, your dad had put together and what your family had done to get the ride with Dale Coyne and how it went and then what transpired from that, how critical that was to your career. Tell me some of the key points of that whole weekend and that whole experience and where it led you.
Well, I mean, it was a total pipe dream, really. Like, my dad thought, okay, I came out of Indy Lights. I'd won the race there in Indy Lights. I won the championship the year before. We tried to get a couple things going with a couple different teams. Nothing materialized. And, my dad just decided, you know what, I'm going to remortgage our house without telling my mom. Take a bunch of money out. He called Dale Coyne like 2 weeks before Long Beach and said, "We want to run at Long Beach. Do you have a car?" He said, "Yes." We flew down to Chicago the week before Long Beach and made a seat at the shop. On the way out to Long Beach, we drove there, and I drove there from Canada in a car.
Wow.
We stopped in Phoenix and did like a half a day test at Firebird just to shake the car down and get me a couple of laps in the car. I'd only driven an Indy car one time before that for True Sports at Mid Ohio, and that was 6-7 months previous to that. So, it was just one of those things. My dad thought, if we go there and we show good, maybe we'll win some prize, make enough prize money, and maybe we'll get to put together something to go to the next race or find a sponsor or something. It was total wing it pipe dream. And we went to Long Beach, and I qualified pretty good. I don't remember exactly where I qualified. I was like 12th, 13th, 14th, something like that. And the race started, and something broke on the car. One of the water pipes for the radiator broke. The motor overheated, and I only think I did 10 laps in the race or something. So that was it. That was the end of it. And after that weekend, I got a call from Roger Penske to come meet with him, and that's where it went from there.
So before Roger calls, though, what are you and your dad thinking? Because it's not like he stopped you 20 minutes after you got out of the car. You had to deal with that for a while, that, oh, we've just spent everything and we couldn't cash in.
I was walking back from where the car was stopped. I was walking back to the garage area, and I actually was walking around the arena, which is in the center of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stopped by a friend of mine, a guy I raced Indy Lights with. His name was Mark Smith. He ran some IndyCar races back in the day. I think he drove for RC Aero.
Yeah, I remember the name.
One season. Yeah. So he stopped me. He's like, oh, man, you were doing great. So we're sitting there, and he's like, what are you going to do now? And I'm like, I don't know. We don't have any money. That's kind of it. And actually, Dan Lugenbuehl, who worked for Roger, kind of was walking by on his way to the pits or something. And he kind of double-taked me and came back and said, hey, Roger wants you to come by the truck after the race and see him after the race. And I was just like, oh, well, okay. And I'm thinking in my mind, did I do something wrong, or did I cut Emerson Fittipaldi off, or did I do something wrong out on the racetrack? And, you know, I went to go meet Roger after the race. And, you know, he said that, you know, asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, well, I want to race Indy cars. And well, he goes, okay, well, hold tight or sit tight or something like that. We'll give you a call in a couple weeks. And, you know, we didn't hear anything for quite a while. You know, Phoenix went by and another race went by, and it got to Indianapolis. We tried to put together a deal to go to Indianapolis and didn't have the money. And then finally the phone rang, you know, just before qualifying at Indian. And Roger called my dad and said, hey, I want you guys to come to Detroit and meet with me in my office at 11 o'clock at night on Saturday night after pole day. And that's when the deal happened.
And that worked out pretty well.
It worked out pretty well, yeah.
Yes, it did. Now, you got to tell this story, because I'm going to play the tape for my son, who I have people when I'm gone, and because I'm incompetent mechanically, to handle him and his go-kart racing. How old were you when you started taking care of yourself at the go-kart track?
Pretty much right away. I mean, I started racing when I was 5. And I always liked to work on the kart and clean the kart and all of that. But I would say I was probably 10 or 11 years old when I had to change my own tires and mount the tires and get the kart ready and, you know, put the chain on and tighten the chain and, you know, do all of that myself, because my dad worked long, long hours. He had a construction business, and he'd go to work at 4 in the morning and come home at 8 or 9 at night. And he basically told me, he said, if your go-kart's not ready to go on Sunday morning when we got to go to the track, then if it's not ready to run, then we're not going. So it was really up to me to make sure it was ready to race.
And you changing the gears, putting the engine in, that kind of thing too?
Yeah, I had to change gears, put the engine on. You know, as I got older, you know, when I was a teenager, I could build my own engines, change the piston and ring and head gaskets, base gaskets, things like that. That's just what you had to do.
Nice. Paul Tracy is joining us. He'll be in the booth with Townsend Bell and Rick Allen this weekend on NBCSN's coverage from Long Beach. All right, you mentioned this at Phoenix. You were telling us to watch out for Sebastian Bourdais. You called your shot. What can he do this year?
Well, I think he's got a good shot at doing really well. I mean, it's time will tell. As the season wears on, but you know, obviously he's still as fast as he ever was. And when I saw him at the Phoenix test, I spoke to him there, and I, you know, heard over the winter that he went to Dale and kind of reassembled his whole program from his Newman Haas days. He got
Craig Hampstead to come there and got all of the people that he's worked with, that he's been comfortable with over the years, and kind of assembled his own perfect scenario. You know, it's kind of the same situation I had at Players. When I joined the Players team for Forsythe, Jerry Forsythe said to me, "Who do you, you know, we need to win the championship this year. Players needs to win the championship. Who do you want as your team?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to have this guy and this guy and this guy." And I basically went out and sought getting all the people that I was, the people that gave me confidence and the people that I had 100% faith in, because racing is a, it's a confidence game. And when you've got the people around you that you, you know are 100% behind you, and you're 100% behind them and confident in them, it boosts your confidence level. And I could tell just by talking to Sebastian in Phoenix that his, he felt really good and really strong. And the way he was running at the test on the oval at Phoenix was, you know, that that kind of track is his Achilles heel. And he was in the top three, four, or five in practice sessions at Phoenix. I thought, man, he's going to be strong this year. And I think that whatever happened in qualifying, they qualified well, but then got put to the back of the field for something.
Well, he made a mistake. That, he went off in qualifying. So, yeah. And
yeah.
Dale Coyne made the comment of, we had to take the shoestrings away from him because we were afraid what he would do, because he knew he had a good car and he had just made a mistake that was going to cost him an opportunity, but it did not.
Yeah. Well, they got, I mean, he obviously won the race. He was quick enough. He was quick all weekend. And, you know, he got some strategy, which put him to the front of the field. But then once you get, once he got a taste of the front of the field, he, I mean, he drove away from the series champion, Simon Pagenaud. He won by 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So he legitimately won the race. I mean, there's some complaints from Scott Dixon. Well, you know, I got put to 14th or 15th and I would have won the race, but at the end of the day, Sebastian won the race by 10 seconds. So it'll be interesting to see how he runs here at Long Beach. I would expect him to be very strong at Long Beach. And but as we get rolling into the middle of the season, you know, the, a third of the way in, when we get to places like Indy and Texas are going to be the question mark of, you know, because for him to, I predicted in Racer Magazine this year, I would be very surprised that he didn't finish in the top five in the championship.
Wow.
I'd be disappointed if he didn't.
So when we were asked to make predictions, I think many of us still thought that Chevy was going to have a huge advantage. So I was just doing an eeny, meeny, miny, moe between the Penske drivers and who I was going to pick. Now that we see, and it's only one race, but it looks like they might be pretty equal. How does that change things? I know for me, I would now switch to Scott Dixon. If I know he's on equal power, I would take Dixon as my pick to win the championship. How do you see things?
Well, it certainly takes away a lot of the complaints and belly aching that, that a lot of the Honda teams had last year, that they, you know, weren't on equal footing, because now that, you know, there's been an aero freeze, so they haven't really been able to change a lot. But when you add a team to the roster like Honda did, of getting Ganassi Racing, and you get guys like Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, and how quick they are, you know that they're going to be front runners.
Mm-hmm.
It has ramped the whole thing up another to another level. So the teams that were complaining that, oh, well, if I had a Chevy, if I had Chevy's aero, if I had this, if I had that, it would be a different story. Well, now, you know, now Ganassi's on the same program as them, and they're right there with Chevy's. So it's, the whole thing has kind of ramped up the performance of the other Honda teams.
I think we're in for an entertaining season, and I think we're going to be able to say there are quite a few that have a legitimate chance at the championship as we get into May and move forward. PT, we'll look forward to hearing you on Friday afternoon, Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon as well, and I'll see you Thursday night. Thanks so much for coming on. Get your phone charged up.
All right. See you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep, thanks. Paul Tracy in the booth for NBCSN again this year with Townsend Bell. Rick Allen will also be anchoring this race coming up this weekend. Let's see. Pit Road will be Marty Snyder, myself, Katie Hargett, and Robin Miller as well. Jan Bikas will be with us for quite a few races as the season moves along. And Lee Diffie, also around F1 conflicts, will be with us. F1 is racing in China. So if you're on the West Coast like we will be this week, I can actually watch free practice. I guess free practice 2 is what we'll be on late tomorrow night, early Friday morning. It'll be like 10 o'clock or something like that, my time. But they're going to race at Sunday morning, I think at 1 a.m. or so on NBCSN. So set your DVR for that. Make sure you're watching us on NBCSN as well. 5 o'clock Eastern Friday for practice 2 from Long Beach, and then qualifying is at 7:30. That's 1 hour delayed, and then live race coverage at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and green flag at about 4:30 or so as well. All right, I know it's just early April, but we're going to give it a May feel. You know who's here, David. It's Donald Davidson. It's not the talk of Gasoline Alley, but it's a little tease, and we will take a few of your questions, but we have something specific we want to talk with Donald about coming to the IMS Museum. We'll do that and start to get set for the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500. Coming up, 93.5 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Oh, listen to that. It's not exactly the talk of Gasoline Alley, but this is a little warm-up for the program, which will continue for, I was told there'd be no math today, Donald, but for many, many years in a row in succession, starting again on Monday, May 8th at 8 o'clock here on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. It's our pleasure to welcome in studio for an appearance on Trackside, the historian of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Donald Davidson. How are you, Donald?
I'm very good, Kevin. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. It's great to see you. There are a couple of things we want to speak to you about. Sure. One, before we get to something coming up, you are again this year basically on tour, going around the state. Tell me about this, and I'm also curious if there's anywhere, maybe Mike Thompson can help us with this. Is there any kind of schedule of where you're going to be that people could be alerted to?
I think there is, although there have been a couple of changes on that. But last year, I traveled around the state with one or two exceptions. When we ventured out with Mike Harmless, former mayor of Greencastle, and it was so well received. We mostly just did it in the spring, and it was so well received, they said, let's do it again. So we're doing it again, and we've ventured out of state a little bit. We've been in Illinois 3 times. We've been in Lexington, Kentucky, Toledo, Ohio, Dayton, but mostly within the state. And we're largely doing Chambers of Commerce lunches and Rotary lunches. We're doing some evening functions, but we've tried to see if some of the places will get several groups together. And so we've had a Chamber of Commerce and a Kiwanis and an Optimist Club joined together. We did that in Newcastle. And we've also asked that a lot of these events be available to the public. And so we've been traveling around, and yesterday, golly, we were in Greenfield for a Chamber of Commerce lunch, and then we went down to the Lawrenceburg racetrack, almost to Cincinnati, and then tomorrow, let's see, we're doing, I got to cheat and look at the book here, we're going down to Bedford, and that's for a Rotary lunch at the Lawrence County Museum. And then the evening, we're playing Shelbyville at the Strand Theater. And
one show only, though, right?
One show only, but two performances in different counties tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then, golly, we're going to Plymouth on Friday. And one thing coming up, there's quite a few before we get there, but on May the 4th, we're going to revive, it is being revived, the old race night that I was involved with for so many years down in Rushville. And so we'll tell you more about that later. But the Rushville race night at the KFC is being revived. And it's everywhere we go, it's great because there's race fans. And as I said last year, and I'll say again, so many mayors around the state are truly race fans. And that just, you get such a warm welcome. And we do a lot of Q&A at the meetings, Rotary Club lunch. There's not a great deal of time, but when we do the programs in the evening, we can run on a little bit till they run us out. And everybody's got their stories about how they used to listen on the radio and where they sit. And they bring memorabilia sometimes to show me. So it's very, very rewarding.
The other thing we wanted to talk with you about is something coming up at the IMS Museum, a special exhibit honoring A.J. Foyt, and this is a good year to do it. There are a lot of years you can pick from, but we've got a good one with an anniversary this year.
Well, yes, this is his 60th consecutive year at the track, either as a driver or an entrant or both. And so right now, actually, the cars are being moved around all over the place, and some of the cars are in place, but there's others that haven't arrived yet that are being borrowed, and there's a lot of banners to hang up. But next Friday, actually, Good Friday is the official opening of the exhibit, and there'll be about 30 vehicles. So there'll be the four winning cars or his that he drove to victory, 61, 64, 67, 77. Typically, they're on display most of the time anyway, but they will be featured. And then the Kenny Breck winner from 1999, which was a Foyt entry. And then, by golly, there's sprint cars, the Le Mans winning Ford from 1967, which he shared with Dan Gurney.
I think they're speaking together tomorrow out in Los Angeles.
Yes. In fact, I did see something along those lines, and it would have been.
Or maybe it was today. It might have been today.
Well, I'm not sure, but yes, I did see something where they were going to be together, and it's too bad that something couldn't have been. Last year, there was an attempt to get Gurney and Foyt were both here, and. There was an attempt to get three significant cars together, and unfortunately, only two of the three could be assembled. But anyway, there's hopefully the Ford, the Le Mans Ford. I say that's the one with the little bubble in the roof because Gurney was so tall, his head was hitting the roof, so they had to make a little bubble so his head would fit. And then Foyt also is lesser known that he shared the winning car in the 24 Hours of Daytona and Sebring 12 Hours, and those cars will be coming. And then there's he won the Daytona 500, of course, and there's a Wood Brothers Mercury that's very similar to the one that he drove to victory. But midgets and sprints, as I said earlier, and other Indianapolis cars that he drove, including his rookie car, the Dean Van Lines special from 1958. And then one of my favorites, and probably Foyt at his best, in 1965, the day that he went to Milwaukee, the day after winning a 100-mile dirt track race at Springfield, back in those days when championship races were one-day affairs. For several years, Springfield dirt on Saturday and Milwaukee on the paved oval the next day. Famously, when after winning Springfield, he went to Milwaukee, found out the rear engine car wasn't coming, so they hosed the dirt off the dirt car, and he won the pole, which was just extraordinary. And then he went on to finish second, and there's quite a story connected with that. But anyway, that car is on display. In fact, I saw it today. It had just arrived on loan. And I was up there on that day, so I'm really dating myself, but as a very young lad, I was up there the day that Foyt drove the dirt car, and that was just a fantastic moment. The crowd went nuts, and to me, that was probably Foyt at his best.
You mentioned the 60th anniversary, and I hadn't seen it referenced that way. I had been seeing this as the 40th anniversary of his fourth win.
Yeah.
And not 60th anniversary, 60th year.
Yeah.
Was 57 the first year he was at the race?
58.
No, I mean at the race, because he came and watched it the year before, right?
He was here before that.
Okay.
He once said either he couldn't remember if it was 53 or 54. But Vukovic won when he was here. And then I know that in 1956, when they still had the midget track across the road, where IMS Productions is now, and what we still call the shopping center, there was a quarter-mile midget track there. And they would run the night before the 500 from 1946 to 58. They would run three separate programs, and of midgets, and they'd qualify, run the heats, feature, and then they get everybody out of the grandstands, and then everybody would line up while they would run through and pick up the trash, and they'd sell tickets. They'd come back in, and then they would do another program complete with qualifying and heats and feature again, and then move them out for a second time and let them come in for a third time. And the last feature would probably end about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then the gates opened at 5, so there wasn't much sleep. But anyway, 21-year-old A.J. Foyt was there in 1956, I think he was 21. Anyway, he qualified for two of the three features and then presumably came over the next morning to watch the race.
I've seen some comments about, I think it was 57, when he watched and you said, I don't know if old AJ is going to be tough enough for this.
Well, I think that was his first hot lap session, I think, at Springfield on the mile in 1957, when he ended up qualifying for his first championship race and beat his Pat O'Connor, one of his heroes, to get into the field. And I think it was there that he said that he was hot lapping, and here comes Jimmy Bryan on one side and maybe Johnny Thompson or somebody on the other side. And then he thought, I don't know if I'm ready for this or not. And then after he drove in his first 500, I just saw a comment just recently that he spun out at 148 laps and then wasn't sure if he was going to come back and do this again.
Yep. Well, good thing he did.
Oh, yes. I mean, just one of the most iconic people in the history of American racing.
So this display is going to be up starting next Friday, the 14th, and it goes through October or something.
I think October the 26th or something like that is the date. So, you know, by golly, when you if you don't go out there on a regular basis, but you're listening from afar and coming in for the month of May,
sure,
go to the museum, because if you're a Foyt fan, or whether you're not, or you know, whatever, it's just and there's a lot of his memorabilia. I mean, he sent up, not only tons of photographs, but a lot of apparel, and. It's just going to be a wonderful tribute. I mean, very similar to the one they did for Parnelli Jones and for Dan Gurney and for Roger Penske. And Foyt will be fated.
Well, while we've got you, we're going to put you to work.
Okay.
And ask you a few questions. And the first one I see is an AJ-related question. So that's good. So we'll do that coming up in just a moment. You can send them in via Twitter at Kevin Lee 23. We could sneak in a phone call if you want to call 239-1070. We can do that as well. Area code 317. It is Trackside on 107.5 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Allister Jr. has the lead. One more turn to go. Here they come. Coming to the finish line. Bob Jenkins, who's going to win it?
The checkered flag is out. Goodyear makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths of a second. Perhaps the closest finish in the history of the Indianapolis 500.
Donald Davidson is here tonight. That's the finish of the 92 Indianapolis 500. Still, despite all the close finishes in recent years, still, Donald, the closest.
Yes, it is.
In the 100 years of this great race. And because as much time as I've spent with Scott Goodyear over the years, including standing and watching our kids run at the go-kart track, I don't think I've ever made him tell me about the end of that race or the end of any of the others, but he is going to do this publicly coming up at the IMS Museum with Al Jr.
Yes.
And with you coming up in May.
Yes, that's on, is it Tuesday, May the 23rd, I believe,
yes,
the date. And apparently the two of them have done this on other occasions, I'm told, but I will have that long-awaited opportunity. In fact, I think both of them couldn't believe, they didn't realize that it was 25 years. So anyway, we're going to, there's now a speaker series at the museum. The May 1, we've been able, or May 23rd, we've prevailed upon Alan Sir Jr. and Scott Goodyear and maybe a couple of other surprises as well to join. And I've got 6 till 8 blocked, and I'm still not sure exactly what the timing is, but we got plenty of time to figure that out. But it is open to the public, I believe, but there's a charge for
members. You can buy tickets at 1070thefan.com.
All right, very good. And it's in conjunction with Amos, and there was one, I think, 2 years ago in a restaurant last year that was Bobby Unser in the lobby of right here on the circle. But anyway, that one will be at the museum, and we're looking forward to talking to Al and Scott Goodyear on that occasion.
Fantastic. We'll mention that more throughout the month of May.
Right, thank you.
John at 81 Indy asks, Donald AJ hit the wall either in practice or carb day. He got out of the car, fell to the ground in the grass. Do you recall this? When was this?
On carb day, that one doesn't ring a bell. In 1966, he'd made a qualifying attempt on the first day with the first Coyote, waved off, and then during a practice session went out and hit the wall, but came back the next day with a, good grief, it was at a Lotus, I think, and I'm not even sure if that's right, but anyway, he did come back and qualify with another car, but Foyt having an accident at all was very unusual, and carburation day and falling to the ground. No,
well, he said it could have been practice. He wasn't sure whether it was carb day or practice.
That one doesn't ring a bell at all.
Okay.
Sorry.
Maybe if someone else knows, they'll pass it along. Paul at PD Lounge says, not many of my Sigma Chi brothers in 500 history. David Letterman is the most famous. But please ask Donald about George Hoster, H-O-S-T-E-R, a 500, a 50s announcer.
Oh, yes. Okay. There was George Hoster that entered a car. So I think George Hoster, I'm getting some tough ones here. I think he was on public address.
Okay.
And might have been a car dealer, because I know there was a car entered as the George Hoster Special in 1950 that I don't even know if it got on the track.
That would make sense, though.
Okay.
And I'm sure there were several people, along with Tom Carnegie, that were handling public address at that time as well.
I'm not doing very well, am I?
Yeah, it's fine. Fine. This is part of the beauty of it. I could always give these in advance, but that would be cheating, and you would be very upset about that. You wouldn't feel right.
No, I wouldn't.
From Donald at Indy Car, can you tell us something about Floyd Trevis?
Trevis,
61 winning car builder. He's from my hometown in Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Floyd Trevis was long-time chief mechanic and car. Did build some cars, but was a chief mechanic, and built this car in 1961, which was a similar approach to A.J. Watson's. In fact, the 61 Foyt winner has been referred to in the past as a Watson, and it was built by Floyd Trevis.
Hmm.
Floyd Trevis built other cars, and he was the pole-winning chief mechanic in 1958 for Lee Elkins, McNamara, with Dick Rathman as driver. And had the Jim Robbins Specials in 1960 with Eddie Johnson and Bud Tingelstad. later became an official. He was on the tech committee for a number of years.
Sasha Khan, whose Twitter handle, Donald, is Sasha Likes Soup, asks if you can talk about the changes made to pit lane and the interest of the pits since the track opened. I know 1974 was one. That may be too broad of a question.
Well, I don't know that I could do that quick. I didn't know we were going to do this. I just thought we were talking about the Foyt exhibit. But that's okay. This is good practice.
I thought so.
The major one would have been in 1957, when from 56 to 57, when the separated pit lane was installed. Up until through 56 and earlier, one would come down the straightaway, and the pit area did not start until the foot of where the pagoda was, which is just effectively where the tunnel is that goes underneath the main straightaway about halfway down. And so you'd come out of turn four and then down the straightaway for hundreds of yards until you got to the pagoda. Then you would pull over, and during practice you would go behind the wall. But on race day, you would simply pull over to the side of the track and do the pitting on the track by the wall. And it was a little bit dangerous because mechanics were out there and cars were whizzing by. And so major redesign was done for 1957. The pagoda came down, the Japanese pagoda. It was actually the wrecking ball took care of that, and that went the glass and steel master control tower. And at the same time, there was the separated pit lane, and so you would come off the fourth turn, come down the straightaway for quite some distance, but north of the master control tower, then you would come off and on to the separated pit lane. And so that was the setup until, well, I think there was a modification done to after the 1964 accident, and then major work done, as you say, for 74, between 73 and 74. And even so, after the 74 job, the pit still extended way far to the north, but you would have to come through turn four before you could come down onto the pit lane and come in. And then, let's see, would it be, we've got to think about this, I think it was the 1992 modification where the pit lane, where the separated warm-up lanes were installed. In other words, when you went out at the south end and onto the track, you would actually have to stay below the line and run on very rough terrain with the cars whizzing by you on the left. And then when the track reopened for the spring of 1993. You now went through turns one and two on a separated pit lane. And by the same token, it was put in at the north end. And so I think from that point on, you could actually begin your entrance to the pits when going through turn three. And to this day, and I may be off a little bit on this, but I think as early as 93, you could do that. And so if you were stricken or you felt that you need to get off the track, instead of sitting out there all the way through three and four and being a sitting duck, you could get off the track through three and then come through the warm-up lane. So those are probably the main changes. I don't know if I hit them all.
Okay, very good. We'll sneak in a couple of phone calls in just a moment with Donald Davidson on Trackside tonight on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
And for a little while, it's bonus Talk of Gasoline Alley featuring Donald Davidson to get you ready for the month of May. We're going to sneak in a phone call or two. Help me out, David. There we go. I got him. Chris in Indianapolis is with Donald Davidson. Go ahead, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Hey, hello there, Donald. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I had a question. My Uncle David was hired by Tony Holman in like 51 or 52,
And the name of their studio was Odell and Shields.
Oh,
did
yeah.
you know Digger Odell?
I knew there it was David Odell and Jim
yep.
Shields. I think I met Shields, but it was long after they were no longer in the business. But Odell and Shields were the official photographers
mm-hmm.
from probably, yeah, because all of the, there were several official photographers over the years, and normally it was a local studio. It would be a downtown studio. And then when the deal would end, and it was, Tower Studios, and it was Charlie Bell and Kirkpatrick were among the better-known names. And there was some kind of an understanding that whenever somebody else took it over, they'd turn all the negatives over. And so Odell and Shields, I suppose, I don't know if I could put a year on it, but probably 51 or 52 would be about right. And I know that they went up until 1958 when the Speedway decided to do its own thing. And then Bud Jones was hired to head up the photography department. But Odell and Shields had a place on a 10th and Lyndhurst. And it was right next to where Firestone was, as I recall.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Jack is in Indianapolis, and next with Donald Davidson. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Donald. I listen to you all the time on the radio.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question. Have you ever heard of the Old Timers Club for the safety patrolmen? As I call them the unsung heroes. My dad worked out there for 30-something years. All kinds of weather, 7 days a week for minimum wage, and you just never hear nothing about the guys that do the safety patrol on the infield.
There's the 500 Old Timers Club, and a number of the people, and many of the members are safety patrol. So I would agree that they're unsung heroes, but I don't know how I can respond to that. I've known a number of them, and until not too long ago, there were some that claimed they'd worked every race since 1946. But even now, I think there's people with 35 and 40 years in. And in fact, I'll just put a shout out right now. The safety patrol, otherwise known now as the Yellow Shirts, I can tell you that last year the track was hiring because they knew they would need many more. And they're asking again, so this is a good opportunity. If anyone would like to be a yellow shirt, this is perfectly serious. Go to the you either call the track, or better yet, go to what used to be the corner of 16th and Georgetown, except it's the roundabout now, and go in the main building on the corner where the old museum used to be, and instead of turning right to go to the ticket department. Turn left, go around the photo reception area, the telephone reception area, and there's an office right there, and they'd be very pleased to see you. And I think it pays $8 an hour, and I tell people...
Do you get to keep the jacket?
Well, I don't think so, and no. I tell people, hey, you know, you may not necessarily get the pit area or the garage area the first time, but you'll be somewhere on the grounds, and you do have access, and so when you get your break, you can go into the garage area and schmooze with Mario or whatever you wanted to. But it's I know a lot of people that do it, and
sure.
So the Gentleman's Call is a good opportunity to throw that out there, that quite seriously, if you think you ever thought you might want to be a yellow shirt for any part of the month, contact them, because they'd be very pleased to talk to you.
Thank you for the question, Jack. That reminds me, I had a job offer too. I forgot to mention earlier, the track where Jackson races. I often get people ask me, how do I get into broadcasting? What can I do? And well, one thing you can do is go to your local track. Well, the Newcastle Motorsports Park, Mark Dismore's track, mm-hmm. needs a PA announcer mm-hmm. for race weekends. Mm-hmm. And they might even have a little bit of a budget. You'll have to negotiate that out with them, what they might pay. But as I always have advised kids, don't really worry about what you get paid. Just get some experience.
Oh, yeah.
Doing something. So if you're serious, would actually like to do that for race weekends, it's usually like an 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. type of thing, and you may be able to make an arrangement to split it up with somebody throughout the day, but just call the track. Look it up on the internet, Newcastle Motorsports Park, and ask for, ask for Mike. He's the general manager of the place, and say, I have an interest, and then you're going to have to sell him on why you should have the job. For now, Mike's the PA announcer, and I don't think Mike really wants to be the PA announcer. They've had one in the past, so if there are any young broadcasters that are hoping to take my job in the next few years, you can get your start. And just remember to speak kindly about the number 52 carts. It's pronounced Jackson Lee. And after, other than that, you can do whatever you want to do. Now, one thing somebody just said on Twitter, I want to make sure I'm correct on this. I think so. Nick Rice says, I thought the Hornish Marco finish was closer. 92 was still closer, was it not?
1992 was the closest finish.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. That's amazing when you think about how close that was.
Yeah.
92, he got up halfway beside him.
Yeah.
He was halfway up beside him, and I think Sam had basically cleared him. I think Marco's car, his front his nose was basically at the rear wheel by the time they crossed the line.
Okay, well, Scott Goodyear was closer than that.
No, I'm saying he was halfway up. His nose of his car was at the cockpit level.
Correct.
So, something like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At the end. AJ Han 1 says, tell Donald I had fun listening to him last night in Lawrenceburg. So he's listening again. So
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate that as well. David, I've had several questions. The Talk of Gasoline Alley will be on iTunes, will it not?
My guess is yes.
I would hope so.
Worst comes to worst, I'll just throw it on the Trackside one.
There you go. We'll put it in our page if it's not on there. Gregory, IndyCar Greg, asks a question. Did Bob Knievel... Is that Evel Knievel's real name, Bob?
Yes.
Did he work for J.C. Agajanian at some point?
He sponsored the Gary Bettenhausen car in 1977.
Okay.
And then it was the Agajanian's Evel Knievel special. And then it would be 1978, I believe, he was on Foyt's crew. And actually, he's in the crew shots and wore the red and white checkered shirts that always I always want to eat spaghetti when I see those shirts. Mm-hmm. I don't know; it just reminds me of a tablecloth in an Italian restaurant. But those are the only 2 years that I know of that he was here.
And Gregory also asks if IMS had its own house car at some point. I don't know if he's referring to the teens when the companies that the owners owned.
There were several of those. Yes, yeah. I wonder. There was the Presto Light Racing team, which was the Maxwells in 1916, and then they owned there was the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Team Company, which had two Peugeots, and in fact that made a transition into the Allison Experimental Company and then Allison Engineering, and it started with the Indianapolis Speedway Team Company. I don't know if that's what they may be referring to.
That makes sense. I think we brought that up on Trackside a few weeks ago, and that's what I was at least thinking of going back to the mid-teens. One other thing before we go, I wanted to mention, because I think you've done some work with them before, the Indiana Racing Memorial Association.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They are erecting a historical marker in Noblesville's Forest Park this Saturday for Brian Clausen. So I wanted to mention that for any of his friends and fans. Saturday at 1:30. So Saturday at 1:30. And the timing goes along with the USAC Midget Kokomo Grand Prix this weekend, and they've had some schedule changes. So before
they
go
have,
off,
in fact, I was going to do the Brian Clausen event while we're talking about it, and I couldn't because I was going to be in Kokomo on Saturday, and we were supposed to do from 1 to 3 at the Kokomo track, and now apparently the timing has been changed, and they've asked if I could come on Sunday. And we haven't worked that out yet. So I may be in Kokomo on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and in which case I suppose I would be available to go to Noblesville and do the Brian Clausen event, but I'm sure they've made some other arrangements. So I'm just sort of thinking aloud here. We really don't know what we're doing yet.
So originally it was scheduled for Friday.
Yeah, Kokomo was supposed to be a Friday night and a Saturday night.
Now it's Saturday, Sunday.
And we were going to do something in the grandstands on Saturday afternoon, but now The request has been, can we go Sunday? I don't know if that will all work out. It's too late for me to readjust and do the Brian Clausen event. So we may or may not be at Kokomo on Sunday, but apparently we won't be there on Saturday, which is what we've been telling everybody that we would be doing. So
we'll get a word.
I don't know.
Jennifer Caldwell says, did Donald say $18 an hour to be a yellow shirt? I thought you said eight.
$8. Yeah, yes.
Eight. Yeah, 18. David and I are going to sign up. But somebody else is doing the radio show. Donald, thank you so much for coming
Thanks, Kevin.
It's just a little tease for people. I know people miss hearing you so much throughout the year. I've tried to talk you into doing your own podcast, but I understand you've really... and I think you have the right strategy. Leave them wanting more. Let's keep May special. And it is special for all of us that have lived in Indianapolis when that night in May, the first time we hear Donald on the radio, it feels all right. It's almost here, so we look forward to that, and it is just over a month away. Thanks to Donald for coming in tonight. Thanks to Paul Tracy for joining us on the program. Make sure you're with us. I hope you can join us in person or support in whatever way you can. The Kevin Lee Grand Prix benefiting Children's Cancer Research, the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Children's Hospital. We'll be there live next Tuesday night, 7 until 9. It will be very entertaining. Hope you can join us. Racing this weekend, the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. Coverage 4 o'clock here on 107.5, 1070 The Fan, and on NBCSN with practice Friday afternoon, qualifying Saturday evening, and the race itself. Hope you can join us. For David Deering, I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks for joining us on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.